December, doing the Christmas marathon, spending 10 days out going on the streets and distributing books with a very large team of devotees. Very kindly, the collections of that book distribution are coming for our project, for our new temple. Pretty significant.
Yes.
Thank you very much. But we're going to reserve tomorrow to hear more about the book distribution and the marathon and the devotees that went out. But this evening, Maharaj is going to speak about a topic that right now he's writing a book on. And in many places that he's visiting, not only here in the UK, but also in the US and so on, and across Europe, he's been presenting the theme of Varanasi. So this evening, Maharaj is going to give us an opportunity to hear about the importance of this theme within ISKCON, within our lives. So in order to make the presentation comfortable, we're going to ask everyone to move so we can face the screen. Maharaj is going to stand at the front there by the screen. So everybody can just turn around.
Can I have one of those things to stand on? Hear me back there, Ravi? Okay. Hare Krishna, everyone. And the question is how loud I have to speak. You can't hear. Louder. Okay. You don't have a mic?
I'll bring it up.
Uh-huh. Yeah. All right. Yeah, microphone will be more comfortable. Nice to be in Leicester. I'm not traveling around Europe. I don't really travel anywhere. I come here to the UK once a year, and I spend a little time traveling around Hungary. As Pradyumna Prabhu said, it's the topic, at least that I thought to introduce. I'll just hold it in my hand, which I thought you might find of value. I won't need that. You just keep it there. Is Varnashrama, and it's a topic that's relevant to devotees, as you'll see, for many reasons, although it's been irrelevant to the Krishna consciousness movement, unfortunately, for many reasons. Perhaps I'll just begin by introducing what Varnashram is. Very generally, I'm not really even going to talk so much about what it is, but rather, as you can see here, that there's a need for it. So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Chaturvarnyama Shishtam, both in the fourth chapter as well as in the 18th chapter, Krishna talks about the different varnas. He doesn't really mention ashramas. And Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 7th canto, 11th canto, there's quite extensive discussion. There's actually 7 chapters devoted to the topic of Varnashram, and it's quite lengthy. 7 chapters out of 180, that means that it's about 4%. So about 4% of Srimad Bhagavatam is directly related to explaining the topic of Varnashrama. And then there are many other related chapters, because although both Krishna consciousness in a greater context, Vedic culture is that's good. Thank you. Vedic culture is about has a basic philosophy, and we often talk about philosophy, but actually the philosophy is useless unless you can live it. And if you want to live it alone in the Himalayas, or you want to live it alone in a sacred place, then that's all right for some people, but that's not the way most people live. Most people live in a society. So the society which was current at the time of the Ramayana, at the time of Mahabharata, at the time of Srimad Bhagavatam, or the times of Srimad Bhagavatam, because that goes back to the times, it had a social structure. And that social structure is called Varnashrama. Now we have the Krishna Consciousness Movement, and it's actually called the technically it's called the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So when Srila Prabhupada in his wisdom formulated the name, he called it a society. Now a society is, yeah, could everyone turn their telephones off, please? So we don't. A society is something which has a physical structure, it has policies, sometimes you call those policies politics, it has economy, it has an underlying philosophy of how it functions and how it works. Now, our Krishna Consciousness Movement, perhaps you've noticed, it doesn't function like a society. It's more a religious institution, or it's a religion, you can call it a church. And religious institutions are a very small part of society. Our economics have very little to do with Krishna consciousness. Our education here does, and that's very good. But fortunately, if you turn your telephone off, then it won't happen. But for the most part, in our Krishna consciousness movement, we don't correlate education with Krishna consciousness. So the point being is that we don't really have, per se, a social structure. Srila Prabhupada had given us sort of the structure for our society, and that structure is a governing body commission, GBC secretaries, temple presidents, which is not really a standard political structure, but it is a working structure, and that is something within which we're meant to be establishing a society. But what are the rights and obligations of the Krishna Consciousness Movement? I don't think you can say, because we don't have a constitution. We have some laws about what you're supposed to do and not do, but although a constitution is in the making, well, nonetheless, we don't as yet have a constitution, and even that constitution will go through different phases. Not only don't we have a constitution, but even if we have a constitution and we have lots of laws, we have no means of enforcement. We don't have a police force in this movement. And that's one of the reasons no one cares about the laws, because there's very little consequence if you break them. The society, host society in which we live, doesn't work like that. If you break a law, they call the police. If you really break some very serious law, you know, we call the police also. But if, for instance, someone decides that he's not going to be vegetarian, there's no police force that's going to come and enforce his misdemeanor or his sinful behavior. So we're missing all of these things. But actually, for us to be an international society for Krishna consciousness, We need to have a social structure. Now, if we take, for instance, United Kingdom, we live in a society here. It's, in one sense, a very well-run society. The fact that it's running everyone to hell is a detail, but it's well-run, and it's well-organized. It has an economy, it has police force, it has politics, it provides all kinds of facility. We've got electricity, we've got running water, we have so many things. The only problem is that everyone is going to hell. So the society, and not just, of course, the United Kingdom doesn't have the privilege of sending everyone to Yamaraj, but the rest of the world is doing the same thing. It may be a democracy in one place, it may be some other political or social structure somewhere else, but the bottom line is the same. Consumer, materialism, capitalism, and ultimately it has no real spiritual guidance or spiritual direction. There's no vision as to what human form of life is about. There's no meaning in society, that society is meant for people's spiritual elevation, and that the social structure is meant to facilitate people going back to Krishna. Well, Krishna they don't even hear, but what about God? There's religions, but once again, religion is very much, we live in a secular world, religion is very much insulated from the rest of society. In other words, all the different aspects, education, work, and so on, are completely separated from religion. So the general theme of the world is economic development at all costs. It doesn't matter whether your children aren't going to be able to breathe, or they're not going to be able to drink water, or the world that they live in is either going to be flooded, either it's going to be destroyed by radioactive material. But right now, the important thing is that everyone should get a real return on their investment, and everyone should enjoy life as much as possible. But Krishna consciousness and Varnashram culture has a different goal. Its goal is not economic development. Its goal is the development of consciousness. And economic development is not important. The distinction between a spiritual culture or the culture of Ramayana, Mahabharata, and so on was that people should advance spiritually, and materially speaking, they should live by what they need, not they should live by what they want. And our society is that everyone should chase what they want. And what you want should increase day by day by day, because there's lots of, what are those billboards called? There's lots of advertisements to make sure, I'm not used to talking English so much, so that's why sometimes I forget some words. There's lots of advertisement to make sure that what you want is always increasing day to day to day. And so we live in a consumer-oriented world where people are chasing this will-of-the-wisp and they live by what they want. And therefore, they have no time for spiritual life. So when you talk to a successful businessman, you tell him to chant Hare Krishna, chant 16 rounds, I don't have any time. He doesn't have any time because he's spending so much time working and so on and achieving some type of level of material success, which is never enough. It should always be higher and higher and more and more. But in Varnashram, in Krishna consciousness, the idea is, no, we should just be satisfied with what we need, which is a very revolutionary idea. But that's the statement, for instance, Ishopanishad starts off like that. Isha vasham idam sarvam yat kinchat jagatyam chagat dena chaptena bunjika. Is that everyone should just live by their quota and not more. Different people have different quotas. Varnashram is not a communist system in the sense that everyone is not meant to have the same. Different people have different quotas. But different people have different needs, and people should live by what they need, not by what they want. And there's a gulf of difference between the two. And when you just live by what you need, which is generally quite minimal, in other words, doesn't matter how rich you are, do rich people get to eat more than not so rich people? Your stomach's only so big. And you eat too much and you get sick. So it isn't that you can eat more, it isn't that you can do things more, maybe it's a little more luxurious circumstances, but ultimately it's the same. You can only sleep so much, you can only eat so much, you can only have so much sex life, although we live in a sex-mad world also. But ultimately all of these things are more or less the same for everybody. But spiritual culture or Varnashram, and this was Srila Prabhupada's vision of introducing Varnashram culture, is to give at least one social structure that's meant to elevate people. Because the people of this world, right now there's 7 billion of them, they are more or less all going to lose their human form of life. And in the next life, the lucky ones are going to be dogs, and the unlucky ones are going to be a lot worse off than that. Because everyone is engaged in the pursuit of their senses, and the end result is that they engage in so many types of sinful activities. Because the society is making sure that everyone is really meant to just be, you know, a brick within the wall. You're meant to fit into the social structure, and from the time that you're very small, television, education, your parents, a society, industry, make sure that you're brainwashed to become a producer and to become a part of this society. So people don't really have much alternative, and therefore they get lost and dragged down. And the result being is that they lose the real benefit of the human form of life. And therefore they don't become humans in their next life. Whereas with this human form of life, you have a wonderful opportunity to actually go back to our original home, go back home, back to Krishna. But for that, you have to have a social structure that facilitates that. And so Srila Prabhupada's idea was that the original social structure, well, I'll say of India, because most recently it was India, but actually it was the whole world. During the time of Maharaj Yudhisthira, the social structure was Varnashram. And everyone followed it. And for those who were very serious, they had the opportunity to go back to Krishna. And those who weren't so serious, at least they were elevated. So it's a society which is meant to elevate people, not to systematically degrade people. And all of you who are older here, you haven't seen any elevation in the way people live, behave, walk, talk, entertain themselves over the last 20, 30, 40, 50 years. You've only seen degradation. And it will increase because it's systematic, because the social structure that we see in the world is being manipulated by the external energy. So it requires spiritual strength. And that spiritual strength comes from being connected with Krishna. So Krishna says, Chaturvanyam maya shishtam guna karma vipagasa We all accept the fact that Krishna has created this world. And he has. But he hasn't just created it, and it's just like, you don't build the school, tell the kids, here it is, have a good time. Because they are going to have a good time, and you're going to come back in the afternoon and they'll have burnt it down by that time. So no, same thing, Krishna just doesn't create this world, and then say, okay, have a good time, because we're also children. But rather, he gives us, Krishna says, tasya kartaram apyam, he says, I have created a social structure. And if you live by that social structure, then you'll know how to actually get the most out of this world. Not just economically, basic necessities everyone should get, but ultimately, that what's to really be gotten out of this world is the opportunity to go back to Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada wanted to establish that social structure primarily amongst his followers. And once his followers are convinced that they should do it, which, believe me, is not an easy thing, that's why we're standing here 50 years after Srila Prabhupada came to the West and talking about whether we should do it or not. Because it really means a 180-degree shift in the way we think, in the way we live, and in many ways in our values. But anyway, more about that later. Srila Prabhupada wanted Krishna consciousness to, or Krishna consciousness movement, to actually adopt the social structure of Varnashrama. And then, once it's working, he wanted to show the rest of the world when the rest of the world would be interested. And there are different historical times when the world gets sort of curious about whether there are alternatives, because they've seen that everything that they tried failed. And if there's no good alternatives, then they go back to the same old materialistic mold. So Srila Prabhupada wanted us to be able to do that, because we, I'm sure devotees have that experience. Sometimes you're talking to other people about Krishna consciousness and people ask you, well, what answer have you got to the problems of life? How would you manage Lester? Perish the thought. How would you manage the world? Well, how would you manage the world? Or do we just talk about it? And then we should at least, rather than just talking about Varnashram, you can talk about it. Well, we would do this. We said, all right, are you doing it in your society? And if you're not doing it, then why are you telling everyone else to do it? So Prabhupada wanted us to show what's called the pilot model. And this is what's meant to be the pilot model, the Krishna consciousness movement. So I'd like to just go through, and I'm not really going to get, as I mentioned, into depth about the different intricacies of Varnashrama, but rather like to talk about its need and why actually we should start at least thinking about it and inquiring about it ourselves. As I mentioned, it's a historical phenomenon. Varnashram exists. But Srila Prabhupada had said different things about Varnashrama. My name is Sri Ram Swami, if you don't know. And Srila Prabhupada had said different things about Varnashrama. He wrote different things. He said that Varnashrama was no longer possible in this age. He said that the Krishna consciousness movement has to establish Varnashram. He said some principles of Varnashram are not practical. He said that Varnashram is the perfect social system. So Srila Prabhupada had said different, apparently contradictory things. They're not really contradictory, they just need to be actually seen in context. And therefore devotees have objections to this whole concept of, do we really need to be even talking about this? Is this even a relevant subject matter? I'm just going to address some of these objections. And before I do, you should recognize that Varnashram is existent in this planet for the last three ages. In Satya Yuga, it wasn't really there because everyone was more or less transcendentally situated. And even if they weren't transcendentalists, they were in the mode of goodness. But in Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, and now in Kali Yuga, Varnashram exists. But the form of Varnashram changes. Its principles stay the same, but how the social structure is adapted depends upon the nature or the quality of the people. So you know, Varna, Ashram means that there are four Varnas: Shudra, Vaishya, Brahman, Kshatriya, and Brahmana. And there are four Ashramas: Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas. So these social orders have rights, have obligations, And more or less, everyone falls into these four. It's Krishna, as I mentioned earlier, Krishna says, Tasya Kartaramatam. He says, I created this system. In other words, it exists. It exists today. It exists here in Leicester, albeit in somewhat of a degraded form, perverted form, distorted form. We see that as far as ashrams are concerned, there's such a thing as students. They're not equivalent to brahmacharis, because brahmacharis are all celibate, and you don't find celibate students. But you have students, you have married people, and sometimes nowadays the men are married to the men, or the women are married to the women, or other various combinations like that. But still you have the grihastha ashram. And then people retire, which is sort of vanaprastha. Very few people take to the renounced order of life, sannyas. And on the other side, in terms of working, well, that you really see everywhere. There are laborer types, there are people who work with matter, artists, musicians, and laborers, and so on. There are people who make money out of matter, and those are called vaishyas. There are people who manage people and manage matter, and they're called kshatriyas. And there are those people who make all kinds of plans for everybody else, and establish standards, intellectuals. So those are Brahmins. They exist. They exist now. You could say it's actually built in within people's genes. But because no one knows what the actual duties of all of these both orders, both social and Prabhupada calls spiritual orders of life is, neither what their rights are, but rather there's a whole subjective system, democratic system of laws which gives people rights and obligations, a democratic system which unfortunately is a dysfunctional one. Democracy can work, but it works when people are qualified to make it work. In other words, when people are more than children, when people actually know what's right and what's wrong, then a vote of majority or management by majority sometimes works. This was actually also the Vedic system in which leaders had a council of Brahmin advisors, and of course they adhered to whatever the guidance was. So back to those four social and spiritual orders, they exist, but they're not recognized as such, and certainly there's no clear delineation of what the rights and obligations are for the purpose of self-realization. There's law and order so that no one interferes with another person's right to live and to make money and to be educated and to do whatever they want. But the laws and the whole system of governance is not for self-realization. That's left to the churches. And as you can see, the religious organizations, and they're not doing a very good job of it. So, what are the objections? What is it that people object to about Varnashram? And can I just see a show of hands? Who thinks they have a little understanding of Varnashram here, just so I can see the audience? We've got a good show of hands. You've read about it. All right. So, devotees are transcendental to Varnashram. That's one of the things. We're Vaishnavas. We chant Hare Krishna. We're above all of these things. So that's, and we'll get to some of these. Lord Chaitanya rejected it. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, the 8th chapter of Madhya Lila, there's a conversation about what sadhana and sadhya is. And Lord Chaitanya is asking, what is the goal of life and how to achieve it? And Ramananda Roy says, one of the things that he answers is Varnashram Avacharata, is that the process of Varnashram is the process by which Samshiri Haritoshanam, by which you please Krishna, and that's the goal.
And Lord Chaitanya rejects that. He says, no, this is all external. It's not practical in this age. Prabhupada wrote something to that effect, that it's not practical in this age. And it degrades into the caste system, which it does. And that's probably one of the major handicaps that we have, not just in terms of talking about Varnashram to the outside world, but even about talking about it to devotees, is that there's a real materialistic version of Varnashram, the caste system. Is there any reason why we get all these lines in this, or just maybe it's this microphone? Or anyway, I guess we can live with it. It's not that bad. So, let's see what we can answer these questions and see what Krishna himself says. And starting about, is it really relevant? Are devotees transcendental to it? Which is a interesting question. You could say it's a funny question, because you could just proceed, or you can answer that question and ask yourself whether you're transcendental to anything. And if you're not completely transcendental, then why should you be just transcendental selectively to Varnashram? So unless someone is transcendentally situated, and Arjuna was certainly transcendentally situated, but Krishna really wasn't interested in that. He still wanted him to do his duty. Yudhisthira Maharaj was also more than transcendentally situated, but still he played the role of the perfect king. And aside from that, beyond transcendence is Krishna. And yet Krishna says, Utsideyura me loka, he says, if I don't set the example, then no one's going to follow. So even Krishna follows the rules of Varnashram. But now in the 11th canto, okay, Pragyumna Prabhu, you're going to have to speak real loud just to help me read the English, because it helps just so we get a little more interactive here. And in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there are two chapters in which Krishna is exclusively talking to Uddhava about Varnashrama. In the 7th chapter, there are 7th canto, there are 5 chapters, and that's Narada Muni. And the context is quite interesting in that, and you know, the 7th canto is all about Nrisimhadeva and Prahlad Maharaj, and a little about Hiranyakashipu, but he's just sort of an extra character. But anyway, at the end, it's a conversation, and it's the way it is the narration between Narada. Narada is relating to Yudhisthira Maharaj, and Krishna is sitting present there, listening to it all. So in short, Yudhisthira Maharaj wants to know, how do you get a society full of Prahlad Maharajas? And Narada Muni answers, you have to have Varnashram. And then you'll get Prahlad Maharajas. And then in 5 chapters, he talks about what Varnashram is. When Krishna's talking to Uddhava, he's also talking. And now here is something that he says, and then Pradyumna Prabhu, English, please.
As long as one is not satiated by fruitive activity and has not awakened his taste for devotional service by Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnam, one has to act according to the regulative principles of Vedic injunctions.
So, of course, this unfortunately, Srila Prabhupada no longer commented here, although our ISKCON commentators have done so, but Acharyas make it very clear, Karmani means Varnashrama. So here it says, as long as one is not satiated by fruitive activity, translated that means as long as one has material desires, and as long as one has not awakened his taste for devotional service. In other words, as long as one has not developed a very, very strong, intense desire for chanting and hearing, which you can test whether you do that. You sit down in the morning when you get up and you close your eyes and you chant 16 rounds of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and without falling asleep, without being distracted, without your mind going off on so many different tangents, and you're just hearing Krishna's holy name. So if these two things are absent, then, he says, one has to act according to the regulated principles of the Vedic injunctions, which is Varnashrama. So here Krishna is saying the Varnashrama is for conditioned souls, and conditioned souls fall into two categories, non-devotees and devotees. Devotees are the lucky conditioned souls, and non-devotees are those who are not fortunate as yet. And of course there's also the liberated devotees, but the liberated devotees are generally in a minority. So this is what Krishna says, and there are other statements, that whole chapter is full of them. But here we see what Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about in terms of Varnashram. He says,
therefore, the Varnashram system should be accepted in all respects. By this arrangement, there is a possibility of gradually attaining love for Krishna. There is no fault in the rejection of the relatively less important process of Varna Ashram by those who have attained perfection in the form of love for Krishna.
So once again here, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying that until one has attained love of God, one needs to actually follow the process of Varnashram. And as we'll see later, why? Because Srila Prabhupada says, Varnashram makes chanting and devotional service easy. It facilitates it. When we use this term conditioned soul, and it's used really abundantly throughout Srila Prabhupada's books, what does it mean to be a conditioned soul? Conditioned soul means that one is dependent, for a Vaishnav, it means that one is dependent on material conditions in the practice of Krishna consciousness. It means that when you're sick, you can't think about Krishna the same way as when you're healthy. It means that now it's nice and comfy over here and it's warm, but tomorrow when we go into the big hall in the temple, then the devotees aren't going to be able to listen so well because they're going to be listening to their minds telling them how cold it is. And this is the type of underfloor heating you need in there. And then it's, so there are these three modes of material nature, and the three modes of material nature are what actually establishes the varnas. Those people who are in a mode of ignorance or who are influenced by ignorance tend to work according to the work of the laborers, the shudras. Those who are mixed ignorance and passion are the business folk, and they're the Vaishyas. The Kshatriyas or the leaders are in the mode of passion, or sometimes in the mode of passion and goodness, mixed with goodness, and ultimately intellectuals are meant to be in the mode of goodness. So these modes of nature are there, and the modes of nature are what conditions us. So in order to come to Krishna consciousness, or in order to actually become Krishna conscious, fully Krishna conscious, one has to come to the mode of goodness. You cannot come to transcendence from ignorance and from passion. You have to be in the mode of goodness. And the mode of goodness is very conducive. When you study the qualities of the mode of goodness, it's very conducive for spiritual life, because the mode of goodness is illuminating, it's based on knowledge, the activities of goodness are very conducive for spiritual life, whereas passion competes with spiritual life and ignorance more or less destroys it. So Varnashram is about establishing those conditions whereby, regardless of who someone is, and especially when we talk about devotees, that they can be in the mode of goodness. How to live in the mode of goodness. You'll see a little more about this later. He says, although someone has attained love of God, he doesn't have to follow, but we see the example is generally, they do. Srila Prabhupada behaved like a perfect sannyasi. Did he have to? No. But he did, because if he didn't, we wouldn't, probably I wouldn't. And then?
One who does not follow the rules and regulations of Varna Ashram is called a Yadava.
Okay, now, what did Srila Prabhupada say? I'm going to go to 7:30, and then stop for questions and answers, and then we'll have kirtan afterwards. So Srila Prabhupada said a lot of things, and I can't put all the things up here, and it's not really relevant. But in 1977, when Srila Prabhupada left the world, Prabhupada became very assertive about the need and the importance of Varnashram. You'll see that for yourself. And in Mayapur, in the middle of February 1977, Prabhupada had an extremely lengthy conversation with about a half dozen of his senior devotees about how Varnashram has to be established in ISKCON for the welfare of devotees, because devotees were falling down from sannyas, from grihastha, from brahmachari life, and also so that we set an example for the rest of the world, because the fabric of society worldwide is destroying human beings' right for spiritual emancipation. I'm selecting a few. The conversation goes on for about an hour. And you can listen to it. It's very lengthy. I'm just, there's a few selected things over here that answer some of these questions, these objections that were raised earlier. And down here you can see there's, this is how many screens there are to this one citation. So, Pradyumna Prabhu. Can you see it?
Yeah. So it's for Lord Chaitanya, when Ramananda Roy brought this up, he said it was not possible in this age to introduce this. Prabhupada. Yes. He did not say possible, vihabhaya. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was interested only on the spiritual platform. He had no idea of material side. He rejected material side. Satsvaru. But don't we do that also? Prabhupada. No. Our position is different. We are trying to implement Krishna consciousness in everything. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally took sannyas. He rejected completely material, nishkanchana, but we are not going to be nishkanchana.
So here Srila Prabhupada answers the second objection, that, well, Lord Chaitanya said we don't need it. Srila Prabhupada answers that. And it's the same answer that Bhaktivinoda Thakur also in their commentaries, Chaitanya Charitamrita, say that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected it from himself as a Paramahamsa sannyasi and someone who doesn't want anything to do with the world. But Srila Prabhupada said, no, our position's different. He says, we're trying to implement Krishna consciousness in everything. So we're not going to do what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did. And there's more along this vein, but I'm not presenting that. Now here's something else, which is three screens. Go ahead.
Prabhupada, chanting will go on. That is not stopped. But at the same time, the Varna Ashram Dharma must be established to make the way easy.
In other words, in this question, the devotees don't need it. But Srila Prabhupada says, no, it makes the way easy. It makes the chanting easy. In other words, if you live in an orderly life, if you live in a mode of goodness, it actually makes Krishna consciousness much easier. If you live a helter-skelter life, or if you live according to the norms that the society around us forces on you, then it makes chanting difficult. The devotees often say, well, I have problems chanting my rounds, I have problems doing this. Of course, that doesn't mean that we're not following the laws of the world. This is not just about what speed you should be driving at, getting here, and so on, and whether we pay our taxes or not. Those things are not the main issue. We're talking about real values. And what are the values that we're adopting within our life? Please continue.
Hari Sauri. Well, at least my own understanding was that the chanting was introduced in the age of Kali because Varnashrama is not possible. Prabhupada. Because it will cleanse the mind. Chanting will not stop. Just like the Sahajiyas also have got the beads, and but they have got 3 dozen women. This kind of chanting will go on. Just like our name withheld, he was not fit for sannyas, but he was given sannyas. And 5 women, he was attached, and he was disclosed. Therefore, varna ashram is required. Simply show bottle will not do. So the varna ashram dharma should be introduced all over the world and satsvarup. Introduced starting with ISKCON community? Prabhupada, yes. Yes.
So it's very clear what Prabhupada here is saying. With the ISKCON community, yes. Go ahead.
Brahmana, Kshatriya, there must be regular education. Hari Sori. But in our community, if the being as we are training up as Vaishnavas, Prabhupada, yes. Hari Sori. Then how will we be able to make divisions in our society? Prabhupada. Vaishnava is not so easy. The Varna Ashram Dharma should be established to become a Vaishnava. It is not so easy to become Vaishnava.
So a lot of Prabhupada touches on a lot of these objections over here. It's Vaishnav, anyone who chants Hare Krishna is Vaishnav, but there are different types of Vaishnav. And it's not so easy to be a Vaishnav. And you'll see this recurring theme Prabhupada keeps saying, but they're falling down. They're falling down. So Varnashram is not just about some rules, but Varnashram is also about education. And actually this is where education starts. So in a Varnashram institution, children also are taught certain values in Gurukula. They're taught values. Unfortunately, we're not going to be able to get there. This is part of quite a long introductory seminar. And it's not even comprehensive. This is just introduction. It's 2 times 4 hours, so it's 8 hours. We're just doing half of the first seminar. But here you can see Srila Prabhupada is answering these questions. And earlier here he said, yes, there must be regular education. Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, what does it mean? Recognize people's natures, train them accordingly, make sure they know what their responsibilities are. Because when they act according to those, it facilitates the practice of Krishna consciousness, and that social system becomes the ideal social system that pleases Krishna. Okay, let's